So I'm Matt Stevenson-Dodd, I'm the Chief Executive of Street League. We use sport to help young people get into jobs all over the UK.
Brilliant. As a leader, what does innovation mean to you?
I think innovation is about challenging the status quo. I think it's about really trying to find new ways to create social impact in our world. If you think about the charity sector, we've been going for decades, and yet we still have lots of social problems. So what is not happening that is, you know, stopping us from making those social problems change? And I think, you know, that brings in all sorts of concepts around risk and taking opportunities and, you know, actually trying things out that aren't going to work. And I think generally, you know, our sector is quite risk averse. It is quite anti-trying things because we're spending public money, and in doing so you sort of feel like you have to be the custodian of that. But actually, you know, we need to be more innovative. So for me, it's about trying to find new ways to do things if they're not quite working.
How do you find successful ways of balancing that risk? I absolutely agree, it is a risk averse sector to work in. So have you found any sort of good ways of being able to balance that risk?
I think really for me, I know that I'm an optimist by my very nature. I'm a risk taker by my very nature. My chair is also a risk taker and an optimist. So we've had to sort of bring people into my team and onto our board who are the opposite. People who are sceptical, people who, you know, don't naturally take risks, to have a proper healthy debate about how we should do stuff. Now, you know, that's allowed us to then think things through to a point that, yes, we will try some things. I tried social franchising in 2014, and my chair, you know, he said since I didn't think it was going to work, but I thought, you know, we should try it and go through it. And it didn't work, actually, you know, for various reasons, but it was worth trying, and we learnt a lot. But the debates we had during that time looking at it, they were really healthy debates to have. And I'd much rather work for an organisation that tried things and didn't always get it right than be an organisation that was so risk averse that it didn't try anything. And we just, you know, stuck to the things that we absolutely could guarantee would be 100% successful.
Yeah, keep it progressive.
Absolutely.
So innovation, it can be applied at all levels, from a distinct innovation strategy to simple tools and templates. So at Street League, what's been your approach to applying innovation to the work that you do?
I think we've got a very, very good senior management team, and we've got some great staff. And I think innovation for me happens at all levels. So you should really be, you know, you should really be on the lookout for innovation. You know, I went to a session that one of our frontline staff was delivering in Glasgow a couple of years ago, and it was a CV writing workshop. And he'd created this workshop based on the sort of idea that you want the young people to come out with a CV and how you write it. But rather than sitting down and saying, right, you know, here's where you put your heading, here's where you put your a little description about yourself, he'd said, imagine you're a Premier League footballer and you're applying for a midfielder position with Leicester City. You know, who are you and what would you write? So they're all kind of coming up with their favourite footballers, you know. Right, put your name at the top, right, that's me. A little bit about yourself and your skills. Well, you know, I used to play for Man City and I, you know, could do this. And, you know, watching these kids, it was incredible. They were getting so excited about writing a CV, you know, and here's my experience and da-da-da, you know, and there's a list. By the end of it, they've got this beautifully presented CV about their favourite footballer. They're so passionate about it. And the guy just said, you know, that's how you write a CV. And you sort of think that to me is innovation. My challenge then as CEO was, how do you share that innovation across the whole of the organisation? So it's just one example. We've led innovation from the centre as well, you know, with our online impact dashboard and our transparency. But, you know, I think innovation happens everywhere, and you've just got to be on the lookout for it.
So it can be quite mercurial in the way that it can just be someone's thought or idea that they put into practice, and so you think it's almost like, yeah, capture that, try and get the essence of that.
I think it's about building a culture that accepts and welcomes innovation. Now, what you don't want is everybody running off and doing lots and lots of different things. You've got to have some cohesiveness to your organisation that actually means it achieves something. But I think unless you allow that creativity to flow a little bit and to limits, people get very bored in their jobs very quickly. I know I would. You know, so we've always had this phrase that I borrowed from one of my mentors when I first started out in the sector. She said, you know, you should have flexibility within a framework. And I've always believed that is a really good way to run an organisation. You know, so Danny in Glasgow creating that session, you know, he was given the flexibility to do that. And flexibility should happen, you know, all over. You know, as charities, we're trying to respond to really quite complex social problems. You can't prescribe that from a head office. I think you've got to allow people to be able to respond.
Brilliant. Now, you just mentioned the impact dashboard, which is one of the first things that I came across Street League doing. It's a brilliant example of both transparency and innovation, and these are two topics which are very popular at the moment within the sector. So could you just give us a little bit of background how it came about?
Sure. So in 2016, we took a bit of a risk with our annual report, and we decided that we would talk upfront about 109 young people who came to Street League that year, but we weren't able to help them. So rather than burying that within the report, we put it up front, and we had a very interesting conversation at the board when I presented this sort of draft annual report. You know, half the board was saying, this is the craziest idea you've ever had, why would you ever talk about failure? And the other half said, this is genius, we need to do this. And again, you know, it's about having a balanced board who can go, yes, you know, we like that, no, we don't like that, and just talk it through. Very interestingly, when we did the board evaluation that year, every single board member said it was their proudest moment. So, you know, we collectively got to a point where we wanted to take a risk, because, you know, in doing something as transparent as that, you aren't able to close the box again. You know, once you've opened that, there's no going back. So that was actually, you know, one of Street League's best years ever. We did help 1,281 young people go into work, education and training that year. So talking about 109 who we weren't able to help was a kind of safe risk. But it was a sort of big step forward. And that really was the catalyst then to start thinking about, you know, this idea that charity work should be difficult and we should be taking risks. You know, we should be trying to find our space in that. Private sector don't want to do this. It's just not profitable. Public sector is completely overwhelmed. You know, charities, social enterprises, I think, should be trying to fill that space that is not comfortable. You know, we should be trying to push ourselves. You know, and in doing that, why not talk about not getting it right? It's just part of it. And so that was really the principle.
Okay. And what has it meant to the organisation? Where has it taken you since the kind of setting it up and letting it run?
You know, it's been brilliant, actually, the response. I, at the time when we launched the annual report, I wrote an article for The Guardian about this. I thought, let's go all in. You know, why not just kind of, this shouldn't just be a little sort of blip for people, but let's try and make this a bigger splash. But I remember thinking the night before it was published, this is either going to go tremendously well or tremendously badly. It was a risk, and you know, my chair and the board went along with that risk and the management team. But actually, it's only been positive, really. And you know, in terms of the charity's profile, in terms of our fundraising, you know, all of that has gone up from, you know, being a sort of, we're a £6 million turnover organisation. You sort of think, you know, you're not going to get great publicity all the time, but it's really helped us shine out and make a statement. And so I think, you know, the last 2 years in particular, from doing the annual report and then doing the impact dashboard online, you know, it's allowed us to sort of keep this conversation going around transparency and around sort of honesty, about what you don't get right, around sort of trying to show your impact in a fuller way. My view with the impact dashboard was, can we actually find a way to let people make their own minds up about whether Street League is successful or not, rather than us just saying, look, we're successful. If we present all the information and you can filter that, then you can decide.
So for those who haven't seen it yet, what would you say is the big differences between the way that most organisations measure themselves and measure impact and what Street League are doing?
I think generally, and things are getting better, but generally the sector has had this approach, which is find one or two stories about beneficiaries where they've had a, you know, tremendously difficult time in life. They've come to your charity and, you know, against all odds, you've helped them succeed. Find your best case study. So that's generally what you put forward. Then there's been a sort of tendency, I think, to sort of choose the biggest number you can find in terms of numbers reached or numbers helped. But really, nobody really understands what helped or reached actually means. You know, one organisation I was looking at had included their Twitter followers in those reached. you know, 200,000 Twitter followers. And you sort of think, is that really the charity having impact on those people? You know, and I think that sort of tendency to try and show, wow, you know, look at us, we've got one success story that we'll take out every time, and a number with a load of zeros on the end that must demonstrate we're doing well. You know, I think that has been the problem, really. So, you know, what I think you've got to try and do, and I'm not saying let's not use success stories because they're a very, very useful tool. I'm saying balance that with actual facts about what happened. So, you know, I could tell you one amazing story about a young person who came to the street, but there were 2,000 other stories, you know, and I think we've got to try and find, you know, a way to show that, because those, you know, those are stories, some of them ended well, some of them didn't end well, you know, some of them we were able to help, some we weren't. It's natural, you know, that's what should be happening, but we need to try and find a way to present that, I think.
Are you saying if we show that we're not 100% successful, that's going to put donors off, it's going to put potential partners off, people are going to be kind of shocked by the realism or the real picture, because there's a culture within the sector of only painting quite a one-dimensional picture?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it was a worry for me. I phoned all of my donors, all of my funders, and said, look, we're thinking about doing this. It's going to be slightly odd. You know, people don't really do this, but we're thinking about doing this. What do you think? And brilliantly, the response was, we've been wanting this for a long time. You know, we want to know where we can help. If there's an issue that we can help solve, then, you know, we'd like to be able to do that. So I don't think it puts donors off. I think if you think about, you know, the last 5 years for the charity sector has been pretty horrible. You know, we've had, you know, horror story after horror story. Kids Company, Olive Cook, Oxfam, you know, these stories do not do us any good, and as a result, not surprisingly, our trust in the charity sector is at lowest it's probably ever been. You know, it's something like 45% trust charity chief executives. We should be up there with nurses who are at 95%. Why aren't we? Because you can see why. So I think, you know, if we perpetuate this cycle of we'll just tell you that we're 100% successful or we're absolutely brilliant, I don't think it's sort of giving the credit to the public and funders that they deserve to say, actually, guys, this is really hard work. We should be tackling these social problems in an innovative and interesting way, and we're not always going to get that right.
So the logical next question is, how do you become more comfortable with risk?
I definitely think there's a link to risk here, and unfortunately, charities aren't known for risk, you know, and you can understand why. You know, I've always found you can get the most entrepreneurial risk takers around a table, a charity table, and when they become a charity board, they suddenly, you know, have to think about the reputation of the charity and what's happening. You know, I've been a trustee, I understand that, but, you know, you come back to the thing we talked about at the beginning. If there's still the big social problems here after decades of charity intervention, I know things have got better in lots of ways, but how do we actually get to that big scale where we're properly challenging and taking on some of these social problems? You know, the use of tech, I think, is just so important in charities now. What if you had the ability to do things at the scale of Google or Amazon, you know, to really change some of these big social issues? To do that, it takes risk. You know, Amazon didn't make profit for 7 years, 8 years. Those investors backed Amazon for that time, knowing that they were making a loss. Can you imagine a charity making a loss for 7 years? I think we've got to change that mindset of risk. And, you know, I think it comes down to charity governance. It comes down to who is leading charities. You know, for me, in my experience, I think chairs of charities who've been CEOs before understand that risk and are able to do it. My chair was chief exec of Dow Chemical worldwide, and then after that, chief exec of British Nuclear Fuels. You know, he's a guy who understands big industry, big growth, but also the risk-taking of business. And I think that has enabled us together to grow Street League in a way where we've been innovative, we've tried things that haven't worked, but we've done a lot of things that have worked. And we're comfortable with that approach.
Now, innovation, as we've been talking about, is a huge topic, crosscuts at all levels, disciplines, departments. So where do you, as a chief exec, where do you look for inspiration?
I would say I'm at the moment looking to the tech sector. I think, you know, some of the innovations that you see there, some of the ideas that are coming forward of how to deal with things, you know, it sometimes can feel quite revolutionary or that would never work, or, you know, and there's a timing thing, you know, are people prepared to take this innovation at that right time? But I've always been inspired by people who've gone against the grain, people who've just said, you know what, there is a different way to do this. I mean, you know, classic examples from business, you know, you can name from Steve Jobs through many others. But I think I like to think, you know, how can the charity sector, the social enterprise sector, do things differently to kind of cut through our current mindset? So, you know, recently at Street League, we've been trying to surround ourselves with people from different worlds, you know, from the tech industry, from, you know, communications, from wherever, things that we, you know, worlds that we're not in, to just see if there's a way of going, okay, we can borrow some of that, we can bring some of that thinking into our world and just try different approaches. You know, we know, building on the back of the impact dashboard, that we've now got a lot of data. Can we use that data to, you know, to do predictive modelling? What if we could assign our resources to a young person who really needs that support based on a set of circumstances? And I'm not, you know, there's potential dangers with predictive modelling, but if you use it in a positive way to add resource, you know, to help young people go through a programme where you think they might well need that, I think that's a real plus. So we've gone to the private sector to look at predictive modelling, you know, and talking to partners there to say, you know, you guys do this every day, what does it look like with our data? Similarly, I think there's a big link to government data. You know, how can we actually unlock the data government have to decide whether our resources are put in the right place? So I'm talking to the government at the moment about, you know, can we unlock access to national insurance data? Our aim at Street League is to get a young person into a job, but the ultimate impact is to have they stayed in that job at 6 months. If I could just hand over, say, 1,000 national insurance numbers and the HMRC say to me 60% of those are still in work, I will know whether we've been successful or not, without having to phone people and, you know, you're not going to get a full data set and, you know, not know where you are. So I think, you know, innovations in that, private sector, public sector, government, can you look at how you can unlock those to take forward the work that Street League's doing?
Right. Do you have a dedicated innovation team or resource?
We do and we don't. So we've invested a lot in our impact measurement team, and my colleague Lindsay, you know, is our director of strategy and impact. You know, she's absolutely brilliant, and her team, they're very much sort of focused on what does this look like. So for me, you know, the future for Street League is, can we prove the value of sport at scale? And to do that, I think we've got to be able to really sort of look at these tech solutions. So, you know, if we were able to put a Fitbit on every young person's arm, for example, and measure whether sport was actually having an impact against a control group, you know, that feels like a really interesting thing to do. But to do that, you have to be able to, you know, you have to be able to coordinate that sort of data at scale, which isn't something Street League's able to do. So I think we'll need, you know, a tech partner to do that. You know, and I think internally we can design the way we want to approach this, but we need partners to help us do that. So we've got, at the moment, three people in our data team. Somebody once told me you should spend as much on impact measurement as you spend on finance, you know, running your finance team. Now, we're not quite there at Street League, but we're certainly getting towards a similar headcount. And I think it's absolutely right, actually, reflecting on it. I think we need to, you know, if you want to do this properly and to the point where you can produce something like an online impact dashboard, you need to spend money on it.
There's I think if you're of the mindset where you kind of get it, you get innovation, and it's a way of work, it's a way of being, it's cultural, then it's kind of a no-brainer. But in your kind of career to date, what techniques, what ways have you used to persuade the more sceptical people that you've come across and kind of get over those barriers
to innovation?
Yeah, to making sure the people you're working with, the people you're, you know, leading, are working in the most innovative way they can.
Yeah, I think you've got to sort of take people with you. People like successes, and I think once you can build up a few successes, people sort of go, okay, this is going to work. You know, I mean, I still get people saying to me, oh, you know, well, social franchising didn't work, and, you know, why are we doing this? Because this isn't going to work. And, you know, I've said I'd always want to be in an organisation that was taking those risks and trying it. So I think you've got, you know, you will still have people all the time. We're a really progressive, innovative organisation, and we've still got people who say, I don't think this is going to work. Why are we bothering? You know, and you know, that's about surrounding yourself with people who are going to see a different point of view, and I think that's right. So you've got to try and win those arguments on a sort of constant basis. But you know, really, I think there's a kind of there's a proof in the pudding. There's a kind of, you know, did you actually do this? But also a sense of leadership. You know, in terms of, are you somebody who people will follow on this journey, wherever it's going to go, based on your track record of getting some of the things right? And I think, you know, for us, we've seen Streetly's profile go up, we've seen Streetly's funding go up in the last couple of years through this transparency piece. And I think, therefore, there's a kind of, well, it's worked. You know, social franchising didn't work out for us, and we know why. But, you know, there's definitely ups and downs in our history. But on balance, I think we've been progressing. And I think that sort of sense of momentum and, you know, moving people forward is what's worked for us.
Okay. So we've talked about risk, we've talked about transparency and kind of how they can help form a culture. On a day-to-day basis, are there any sort of practical processes or frameworks or ways of working that you feel are distinctly innovative at the moment that you're using at Streetly?
I think our use of data and being impact-led is what's really, really helped us. So, you know, if you sort of decide that the reason your charity is there is not just to exist, it's to try and create impact, you can actually measure everything back from that point. Is everything working towards creating impact? And if it's not, then why are we doing it? And I think that approach has really helped us. We were backed by two of the leading venture philanthropy organisations in this country, so Impetus PEF and Inspiring Scotland. And that's been since about 2009. Our relationship with Impetus PEF ended last year. Inspiring Scotland's ongoing. But throughout that process, we've been sort of really pushed towards, you know, better impact measurement, better sort of just asking the question again and again, could you go further? And that really helped us. You know, when you think you've got there, you haven't actually got there, you could go further. So I think that kind of use of data to push us along, constantly questioning, is this good enough? Is this right? And, you know, I don't think Street League has entirely got this right yet. I think this is you know, it works very, very well for our example in terms of transparency. But, you know, imagine you're running a helpline, say like Childline, for example. There's very little ways that you can actually monitor the effect of that phone call after the young person has put the phone down, you know, without intruding on their privacy. So, you know, it doesn't work in all cases. And I'm really interested in, you know, those sort of examples. How can we make transparency work in those areas? And I think there are some solutions. But generally, I think, you know, being data-led and being impact-led is the right approach.
Do you think if you were to highlight a place to start, so for example, if someone's coming quite fresh to innovation, because it is quite a zeitgeisty thing to talk about at the moment within the sector, and there'll be people out there listening thinking, oh, you know, I've just been told by my chief exec or my, you know, my trustee board that I need to go away and do something innovative or come up with an innovation strategy in the way that the sector does sometimes. Where would you say is a good place to start if you want to start thinking differently, acting differently, behaving differently?
I think I would start by looking at the activities of the organisation and saying, does everything add value? It would be a great starting point, actually. And if it doesn't, then stop doing it. Then sort of think, is there any areas that we're not adding value? Is there anywhere areas that this organisation is not being impactful? And then add those areas. I think sometimes you can sort of have a forced innovation strategies. You know, we need to be innovative for the sake of it. But unless there's a purpose, there really is no point doing it. I think the hardest thing is probably where you're in an organisation where what you kind of realise what you're doing is adding no value whatsoever, and then having to rethink the whole thing. That's brave, but it's necessary, I think. And, you know, the challenge is to try and really do that, try and really make that big change.
innovation is sometimes pigeonholed into new and expensive tech, things like big data, AI, virtual reality. But as we've discussed, it can be as simple as a change in behaviour, a new approach, new ways of working. What developments have you seen that have excited you the most and that you think could really change the sector? And that could be anything from new tech or new communication methods, changes in business behaviour.
I think tech doesn't need to be expensive. You know, when we did the Impact Dashboard, it costs £300 a year for the license for Power BI to display the data in a really interesting way. And that just draws from an Excel spreadsheet. Yeah, so it's actually really quite simple. It looks really expensive, but the really hard work was done 4 years ago, actually making sure that the data that goes into the database was accurate. I mean, I think generally, like we were talking about the example of the guy doing the CV workshop, you know, this creating this space for innovation can be very cheap. At the other end, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, measuring whether people are taking part in sport or not. So Google are about to launch a new watch. What if they did a buy one, give one? And, you know, for every watch that was bought, they gave one to a young person to prove whether sport was making a difference to their lives. Now, to try and get that sort of deal is just, you know, astronomical. It's just, you know, it's big and probably well beyond Street League. So, you know, trying to find the right context to be able to do that is a lot harder. But then, you know, you sort of think collectively, like my example about national insurance data, that would benefit every employability charity and organisation in the country. So we should be working collectively, and I'm working with New Philanthropy Capital on this, to try and unlock that for everybody. So, you know, I think there are different ways to get into this and different solutions. You know, actually, you see a lot of apps coming out, but I really wonder whether apps are just a fad, really. You know, and people think we need an app for that. Actually, you know, if there's a way of using an existing method or an existing infrastructure, you know, somebody once said to me that, you know, I sit on these panels where you sort of evaluate new social enterprise ideas, and somebody said, if somebody comes along with this is the Facebook for social entrepreneurs, Facebook is the Facebook for social entrepreneurs. And I think you've actually got, you know, he's absolutely right. You've got to look at what is existing already and can it be adapted or used as a tool. Some of these big platforms are really, really useful, and just with a few different adaptations of how to use it, like we use Power BI, you know, to do this, which is actually a hugely complicated thing, but, you know, is very easy after you watch a few YouTube videos to make it do what you want it to do. You know, and that really was just the icing on the cake of a big thing, you know, big long process in data management. So, yeah, I'm constantly looking, I think, for that next thing. We were talking to a newspaper about one of their fantasy football apps, actually, because they're already reaching 1.25 million people, you know, and they're 16 to 25 year olds. They're our target audience. You know, can we serve them with Street League information at the same time? You know, I think it's those sort of partnerships for the future. So the newspaper gets a CSR angle. It doesn't cost them anything to add an advert for Street League on there. You know, it's their CSR view, but we get to reach a whole load of new people. Those are the innovative things I think we've got to look for.
Just picking up on that, what's been your experience in terms of kind of success rate of reaching out for those kind of partnerships?
I mean, Street League's been very lucky. I think it's because, you know, it's an interesting charity and it works, and we're able to talk to businesses in a language that they understand, which is about, you invest this much, we'll give you this much. You know, it's very, very clear transactional stuff. It's not a kind of, here's a begging bowl, we're a lovely charity, give us some money and we'll do magic things with it. You know, we're able to talk about that. So, you know, we've actually had some really good interactions. One of my board members is Andy Ransom, who runs Rentokil, huge organisation. You know, he just said to me the other day, you know, you've just got to set out a vision, you've got to work out what resource you need, and you've just got to go and get the resource. And it was a bit of a light bulb moment for me, because I was thinking, we've been very reactive to what's coming our way, but actually you can be proactive. So why not go and have a conversation with Google about their new watch? Why not try? Why not try and go to a funder and say, we need another £10 million a year to make this happen and be able to prove this value? And I got really inspired by that. I thought, actually, yeah, you know, we can sit here and be reactive to what we've got coming at us, or we can be proactive and make something happen.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned along the way of doing this is the kind of the concept of overreaching. And even if you don't get to the kind of like the impossible place you've set for yourself, you're going to get a lot further than you would have done if you'd held yourself back in the first place. There's quite a lot in what you were just saying around collaboration. And again, one of the things that I've learned along the way is that collaboration seems to be absolutely the lifeblood of innovation, that sharing of ideas, that openness. Any tips or any ways that you found that are particularly useful for increasing the amount of collaboration within either an organisation, within the sector, within a project?
Yeah, I think collaboration is a really interesting thing, isn't it? Because everybody talks about we have to be in partnership, but actually a lot of partnerships don't work because there's not a win-win on both sides and they tend to fall down. I think you've got to go into things, you know, absolutely with your eyes open and say, we will get into partnership with you if it's a win-win. This is what we learned about working with the corporate sector. They don't want to just hand over money and watch you do great stuff. They want interaction. You know, they want to send volunteers. They want to be part of it, and quite rightly so. You know, it needs to benefit them as well as benefiting us. And I think, you know, if you go into any partnership, that's got to be the way. So, I mean, I have lots of partnership meetings, you know, with other organisations. And I always start the meeting by saying, look, if there's not a way of doing this, let's just walk out, shake hands, and accept that that's okay. Because you can spend days, weeks, you know, trying to make something work, and it's got to be beneficial on both sides, I think, to actually get there. So, you know, if I want to go and talk to an Amazon or a Google or a Microsoft, you've got to find a way that it works for them as well, I think. And that's really exciting, you know, if you could do that and unlock this potential. You know, Street League's in a lovely position at the moment because we've built this transparency thing over the last 2 years, but we've also built on a track record of, you know, 15 years of running this organisation that's enabled us to get to this point. You know, I think that gives us a really good platform to try and have those bigger conversations. Why not be ambitious? Like you say, why not overreach? Because I think, you know, we have to try and find a way to make a bigger change and stop just this kind of constant, you know, am I just running just to provide the salaries of the staff in this charity, or am I actually running to be impact led and really make a social change? And to do that, we've got to make big choices about how we do things differently.
What's a good way to kind of chip away at the status quo and actually start to make some real good inroads into being more innovative, seeing that change, the things you're talking about, being more impact-led, being more transparent?
Well, I mean, I think it, you know, it comes back to what I was saying before. I don't think it matters how big you are. It just matters whether you're measuring whether you're impact-led or not. So I'm on the board of on St John Ambulance, you know, and I've asked the same question: how do we know when we're successful? And we're starting to get there now. We're starting to know whether we're successful or not. But it's been a big journey to do that. We've still got a long way to go. I think, you know, it doesn't matter how big your charity is. It matters whether you are putting the impact of the organisation first, or whether you're putting, have we got enough money to pay everybody's wage this year or this month, you know, first. And, you know, I think that's the change we've got to make. Because if you become impact-led, you know, there'll be things that you are doing that you don't need to do. They are not right for the organisation. It's just because you're at scale. Scope have just done this recently, haven't they? They've made a big change to being impact led and said, actually, let's stop providing these services because, you know, frankly, it's not part of the mission, and we're only as good as anybody else doing it. We might as well not do it. You know, I know a lot of charities are very, very close to, you know, delivering public sector contracts like Serco or whatever. What's the actual difference? And I think if you can ask yourself what's the difference we're making, then you can direct the resource of the charity or the social enterprise to where it's most needed. So, you know, the challenge is being a CEO of one of these big organisations, I would imagine, is you've got all the history, you know, all the kind of what if we do something different, will people continue to donate? But I don't think we should measure charities by the size of the turnover. We should measure charities by the size of their impact. And that, to me, is the big difference. PwC do this index of, you know, the top 100 charities on transparency, and I applied to put our annual report in and was told that we were not part of the top 100 charities because we're just not big enough, and clearly we're not. And I think they were sort of linking it to the FTSE 100 of charities. You can understand where they were going, but, you know, my argument to them was this shouldn't be about turnover, it should be about impact.
Absolutely, yeah. It's almost like an arbitrary measure, just size, if you're not making the impact and changing the lives of the people you set up to do. To be a purpose-driven organisation.
So, I would feel comfortable as a trustee of St John Ambulance if our income halved, but we were absolutely pushing that transparency. I don't think we need to do that, by the way, but Scope's income has gone down 40% because they've made that decision. I think it's right, it's brave, but it's right, because they're more impact led.
And there's one of the things that kind of spurred me to do this in the first place was that I feel the sector has a responsibility, more than any other sector, to be as efficient, as effective as possible, because, like you're saying, we're custodians of that money, and if you're doing things arbitrarily or not in the most effective way possible for the beneficiary, then you shouldn't be doing it. It's that simple. And it feels that that's kind of got lost somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole culture of charity has been, let's not talk about failure, let's say we're 100% successful, let's measure ourselves by the size of our organisation. And you still get into a networking room with charity CEOs, and it's still, oh, not heard of Streetly, how big is it? It's one of the first questions that is asked, and actually, it'd be great, wouldn't it, if people said, oh, I've not heard of Streetly, how impactful are you?
Yeah.
And that's the narrative I think we've got to change.
So just to kind of wrap up, one of the things I want to do with this is try and demystify innovation and sort of bring it into a more, real, normalised place for people, so they don't feel scared by it, so they can really kind of get hold of it and wrestle with it, and that can be as small as being more comfortable with risk. So I'm not sure what the question is here, but if there's a way of, rather than it being from the way you're speaking, Matt, it's not about, okay, this is my job and part of that job is I've got a line item here which is be innovative, or innovation KPIs. How do you feel would be a way that you can just start to embody it, either as an organisation, as an individual, as a leader, as an officer? Is there certain just ways of being?
Well, it's funny, because when you asked to do this interview, I didn't actually think we were that innovative. I think it's just a product of what's happening at Streetly. Yes, it kind of looks innovative from the outside, but I don't think we set out in the day to say, let's be innovative today. It's probably more of a mindset about being data-led, but being risk-takers and being comfortable with not getting things right to a point. Now, there is a balance. I read somewhere that good chief executives should be making 30% wrong decisions. Because if you're not, then you are just sticking to absolutely the status quo. I feel... okay with that, but what if it was 40% wrong decisions? Would you feel okay with that? And would the board feel okay with me making 40% wrong decisions? But it's kind of, I think we've got to be challenging ourselves on that, on risk, because if you're a chief exec or a leadership team that's making 100% correct decisions all the time, you're not tackling the big problems that are out there, because you cannot be, unless you're a team of absolute miracle workers, which is probably, there are people out there like that. But, really, we should be accepting a level of risk, a level of failure, a level of tolerance of that we're all comfortable with. And we should be all communicating that. Because if one or two of us just do it and nobody else does it, you sort of get to a point where people think, oh, they're outliers. It's brilliant to see last week Click Sergeant, in their impact report, page 21, that it leads with hands up, we're not perfect, and then they listed all the things they didn't get right in the year. It's just brilliant to see a large charity like that making that sort of statement. There was a whole conference on failure, the F word conference last week, on a day on failure. These are the sort of things that we need to be seeing as the new norm, not exceptions. I'd love to see every single charity just having a page in their annual report on this is what we didn't get right this year, because it then becomes part of the conversation, and I think people will then start to rebuild that trust in charities that we've lost through a kind of, look, we know that you're being realistic about what you're able to do and what you're not able to do, but I want to give money to charity, and I do on the basis that they're going to try and deal with some of these big problems and actually solve them, get somewhere. And to do that, you need to take risk.
And you can't improve if you're not actually accepting there's room to improve, there's things to improve. I think that's quite a good vision for the sector overall, and a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Matt. It's been really good.
Thank you.